Thanks for that, Ryan. The year was 2005, and I had had some excellent results predicting future news stories, trends, etc., and monetizing them. Of course, being a programmer, I did this programmatically. Microsoft, Google, and Yahoo were all paying me to pollute the internet. It would be many years before they'd assert more control, and frankly, as they took away our predictions and gave them to others, our algorithms just had to stretch out into the long tail to find more content. At first, we weren't polluting. In fact, we were probably on track to become a legit journalistic establishment. Legit and journalistic in the same sentence. Okay, so maybe we didn't miss out on that much. But the point is that once it wasn't enough to get the scoop to get the traffic, because the powers that be would give it to someone else, we started scraping and aggregating and arbitraging and looking for a way to roll with the punches. The long tail was working, but it was pollution. We no longer felt good about what we were producing. In fact, no matter how much they paid us for being the only page on the internet to have content on a common misspelling of some celebrity's name, it didn't make up for the illegitimacy of it all. Despite the profitability, we ended up shutting those servers down. The synthetic theft of our scoops via evolving analytics were a cruel taskmaster. Once the top page in the search results was Google News' scrape of our own site, while our own site was on page 22 and 3/4, the writing was on the wall. What are we to expect from a company whose business model literally began by plagiarizing the entire internet? Now they serve up fabulous features like image search and smart descriptions that allow the world to browse your content without you ever knowing it. No hits for you, they say, as the top of the search page is covered with their ads, ads that they no longer share one penny of. Oh, too bad, so sad, right? In the midst of that, you can imagine how complex our own code was getting. Scooping major trends legitimately was easy. Did you know they pre-choose the names of hurricanes and tropical storms? Yep, I learned more about that than I ever wanted to know. Anyway, all of this rambling is leading somewhere. During that time, I was personally desperate to produce something legit. So, of course, I set out to analyze the stock market. I mean, what could be more legit than that? We all know that stocks are entirely organic, right? That fundamentals drive the market. Wink, wink. Silly me. So, if you can, search Wikipedia for the Farmer's Almanac and scroll down to the section about accuracy. Don't worry, we're on track now. Realize I was embarking on producing the legit Farmer's Almanac of stocks. So, whether you found it or not, I'll summarize. And since it's on the internet, it must be true. As it turns out, the publishers claim it's between 80 and 85% accurate. Go figure that, a range, 80 to 85, which means that at the lowest, it's 80% accurate. Impressive. Then the next paragraph points out that the actual studies have shown it to be a coin toss, 50% accuracy. Finally, pointing out that it does have a slightly higher accuracy rate than Punxsutawney Phil. Ironically, when I was preparing for this, I found the misspelled version of Punxsutawney Phil first. Yet just a few days ago, I bit my tongue as a small board I'm on discussed the implications of the Farmer's Almanac on our planning for 2020. People crave crystal balls. That's why predictive analytics, machine learning, and just data in general is such a big part of the budget in so many places. As you might begin to guess, I'm the guy that shut down profitable servers because they were illegitimate. You can imagine what I was about to discover about predictive analytics. You guessed it. A whole lot of it is pure bovine scatology. I pulled data from every source I could find. I keyed and indexed it and maintained detailed hit and miss records. I spotted some trends, this contributor at Fool.com, this ticker at Forbes. I was about to strike gold, only I wasn't. In the end, every pattern I'd thought I'd spotted was about as reliable as a coin toss. I was reminded of a college professor that taught us how to determine probabilities, making the statement, if you flip a coin 10 times and it comes up heads every time, what are the odds the next one will be heads? Yet here I am, in a field where these trends are so lucrative. It's not enough to make something work. No, we need to predict the future. Anyone that can convince corporate America that they know the future is rewarded handsomely. It used to be the stars or tea leaves or chicken bones, even just numbers themselves, any set of dice or stack of cards, and some complex description of why, how was enough. Now we have computers and computer models, which is how we know that polar bears are now extinct, the ice caps have melted, the coasts are flooded, and COVID-19 would have killed more people than the Spanish flu by now if we all hadn't agreed to voluntary house arrest. This sounds cynical, but it's not, and here's why. There are very important reasons to quantify historic trends. Knowledge is power, and data is knowledge. The scientific method mandates that we analyze and repeat results. And even then, any hypothesis remains falsifiable. These are good practices when done without false promises and shortcuts. Those who don't learn from the past are doomed to repeat it. Yet there's another aspect to all this. So much of what we call computer science, or now data science, short circuits actual science. Of course it shouldn't, but it does. As soon as being legit isn't a priority, as soon as political and profit motivation or even just wishful thinking or fear get mixed in. Why is the Farmer's Almanac so popular? Because people have seen droughts and freezes and floods, and they long for some sense of security. If we're not careful, we become charlatan bait. More than the predictive analytics, we need data wisdom. We need to identify what trends repeat in a finite enough way to guide our decisions, and which are just irrational to pursue. The right balance here can be as elusive as the crystal ball so many crave, the sorcerer's stone, the holy grail, the goose that lays the golden egg. I can't say whether mankind will ever evolve beyond superstition. The trends all point to probably not, as does my magic eight ball. What I can tell you is if we value legit over anything else, honesty over flattery, practicality over politics, if we use our influence to promote reality and embrace uncertainty, it will give us a rational edge over those that still consult mediums or fortune tellers. It doesn't mean you'll always be right or that they'll always be wrong. It'll just mean that you know the difference between a database decision and a coin toss. That just because someone with your same first name won $100 million only six states away in 2003 doesn't mean that you'll rush out and waste your money on a lottery ticket. It also doesn't mean you'd lose if you did either. Data wisdom only happens to the degree that we insulate data science from the synthetic factors like politics, profitability, and plain old superstition. To do this is not easy. But again, knowing what is legit and what's just lip service is a big start. Finally, a last piece of advice. If and when you are hoodwinked by a charlatan, and they prove themselves to be a charlatan, the best data-driven decision you can make is to move on and not continue to even listen to their advice. They won't always be wrong, any more than a coin toss will always be heads. What they will do is inject persistent irrationality into your organization, which in turn will likely result in the distinct possibility that Punxsutawney Phil would have served you better. Thanks for listening.